All right, Project, welcome back. This is episode 101, and this is part two with Barbell Shrugged. And it was a fantastic episode last week. And thank you so much to Barbell Shrugged for posting it on Barbell Business, which is one of their other podcasts, which will be on this week as well. So if you want to go over and subscribe to their podcast, Barbell Business, and check out our episode that we did with them, that will be there as well. We did some stuff where we talked about our gyms and kind of the My Muscle Project and how we've grown it over time. We're really excited. Yeah, this part two is going to be really cool, and our episode with them is also going to be really awesome.
The question you must be thinking of now is like, who's going to be on episode 200? It's about time I think we started thinking about it.
I also want to know that question.
I don't know.
It's like, what is going to happen in 2 years from now? So we also did the after show. That was our first episode of the after show. That came out later in the week. And the after show episode two is going to be out this week as well. So it went for like half an hour. We covered a bunch of topics. We're kind of bouncing around all over the place. But I think we had a great time. You guys really enjoyed it. Some pretty cool feedback. Mm. So thanks for that. We won't keep you waiting any longer. Just one sponsor this week, and then we'll jump into the show. All right, this week, the My Muscle Project is brought to you by another audio-based company. It's called Audible. It's a place where different people around the world read books to you. And it's a pretty exciting idea, and it's really cool. And a lot of you got on board with that, so thank you for supporting the show. Our link is audible.com.au/mindmuscle. The book I recommend you listen to this week is Sapiens. I think it's called A Brief History of Humankind. I think that's the understanding. Is he Israeli, the dude? I think he's from Israel. I have a feeling. The author. I think so. Anyway, he talks about you look very confused. He talks about how humans came to be and how we came to think. And he has like a pretty good analysis. I mean, everything's subjective. Nothing's objective, but he has a good analysis of how it all came to be, and it's extremely interesting. And I know I got onto that book because Tim Ferriss said that it was the most influential book for him in like 2015. So once he said that, I was like, I'm getting this book, and it's really good. You should go listen to it.
I'm listening to Michael Jordan's autobiography.
Oh, nice.
And it's good because I find there's a lot of parallels between like his career and my own CrossFit career. So it's like quite interesting for me as well.
Are you dealing with a lot of racism?
Yeah, racism and just a lot of success. Outrageous success.
You can pick up those two free books using our link, audible.com.au/mymuscle. That's two free books and your first month free. Thanks, guys. This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Raph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project.
That is built for CrossFit gyms. It is the best thing on the market for growing your membership if you're a gym owner. And when we started selling that, it became very obvious that it was better than anything else out there by like 10x. And in fact, some people are trying to do something similar at this point, which is great. That's what helps keep things innovating for sure. So we had that. We actually did not build that ourselves. Somebody had built it and called me up and was like, hey, we built this thing. We want to show it to you. And he described it to me on the phone. I was like, there's no way this is real. Like, I was like, this guy's bullshitting me. And the guy's living right up the road. And I was like, well, just meet me for breakfast on Friday. And we'll talk about it, and Doug and I will take a look at what you got. And the next morning he came in, and he was telling us, he talked a big game, and I was like, all right, this guy's probably full of shit. Nothing's that good. And then Doug was able to take a look at the insides of this thing, look at the guts, and 2 hours go by, and I go start doing whatever I do. And then
outside, just doing flips in the grass or something.
Yeah, something like that. Playing, probably. And then Doug calls me up, and he's like, dude, it's as legit as the guy says it is. And I said, okay. Mm-hmm. So we struck a deal, and that was over a year ago. And so that we'd really pulled that into Barbell Business. And the thing about that product is there's from a technological perspective, it's very advanced. And it's also from a marketing perspective, very advanced. And I don't know, maybe I'm going over people's heads here, or I'm being very vague, not going over anyone's head, but it's...
Go deep.
I was going to say, it's one of those things where I don't think I could explain how good it is to people. It's one of those things like when the guy's now my buddy, when he explained it to me on the phone, I was like, oh, you're full of shit. There's no way it works that well.
Well, he actually emailed me, and then I forwarded it all over to you, and you guys got on the phone. But when I read it, I was like, ah, oh, fuck. Like, hey, I'll just send this to Mike. Mike can take care of this. Like, that's more Mike's role to, like, deal with partnerships and things like that. But, like, but I was kind of like, I don't know. But I didn't just disregard it. I was like, I'll just send it to Mike. No big deal. And then he meets with him, tells me about it, and I was like, oh, well, that's cool. Like, we had talked about making one of these types of systems ourselves.
We were very aware that this kind of thing could exist, and building it would be
a motherfucker.
A motherfucker.
Like, I'd already like done some of the layers of work to like map out what this whole thing would look like, and then I was like, God, this is a really big project, and we already have so much cool stuff going on with Barbell Shrug. Like, okay, well, I'll do this someday, but not right now. We're just too busy. And then Mike meets with Marcus. Marcus takes me over to show me this whole thing, and I look at it, and I go back to Mike, and I'm like, dude, this is like 20 times better than what I was gonna make. Like,
yeah.
And I was so thrilled because I was like, now I don't have to make this, and this is so much fucking better anyway. I don't have to worry about it. That sounds awesome. Let's partner with these dudes.
So yeah. They needed you to launch the product for them. They needed your audience, or he needed your audience.
Yeah,
Marcus.
I mean, it made sense. They had put their heads down and built a thing and didn't have a market to market.
They didn't have an audience.
They put all mm-hmm. their effort into building the best product possible.
Yeah.
Took them years to do it.
Yeah, 3 years. All right. So if somebody, this is why I was like, I'm so confident in the product. If somebody wanted to replicate what we have, it's just going to take them a long time.
Yeah.
Like, no one's catching up anytime soon. And the, which is exciting for us. So yeah, they had spent 3 years building a product, and we had spent 3-4 years building an audience, and it just was a perfect match. And in addition to that, the product that they had built, like Doug had said, he had begun mapping it out. The fundamentals of their product is based on our personal philosophy around business. So it wasn't like we had to learn anything to understand the product. It was like, oh, this is exactly how we would love to do it if we had 3 years and the technical abilities to build this.
What were your personal philosophies? Abundance is like part of it?
Well, yeah, abundance is, and then there's just how to market to people.
Okay.
Like how to nurture potential leads, bring them in the door, like how to start a relationship with somebody before you meet them face to face. So, when they get to your website, what's the purpose of your website? It's to market to new people.
Sure.
Your website is not for your current membership.
Yeah.
Right? However, everyone posts the workout of the day on the website. Why? That's what, you can put that somewhere else, or not at all, or it can go on a page not on the homepage. I think people saw what CrossFit.com did and just kind of mimicked that.
Bad idea.
Not a good idea.
Bad idea.
Treating it that way. Building in email autoresponders, automating as much of the marketing as possible, because it's the website, it's also the email automation on the back end, and then it also fits really nicely with whatever model you're running in your facility. So if you're running, not all CrossFit gyms run the same way. So building marketing automation that's specific to the business model is very good. And then also building it in a way that is even though it's automated, it's very personal. And it frees up the business owner to be able to do the thing they started a gym to do, which was coach, right? And so not sit there and having to answer emails all day or try to get new clients. It automates a lot of these processes. So, our personal philosophy is around automating, having a robot do as much as humanly possible, robotically possible, so that the humans can do human things. Yeah.
When you're bringing someone on to use the product in you, essentially, they're interested, and obviously you're like, look, we got the answer for you. Like, you've got all these problems. Like, here is the solution, but they're still not connecting with it. Like, what is the usual thing where they're not stepping through and going forward with it? Like, for example, we had the conversation with Marcus once, and we didn't end up going with it. I think because of the same way, like, we actually have quite a lot of manpower. So I was like, look, we can do something similar to this. And right now, like, financially, it didn't work out. What are some of the reasons you see, like, people not go through?
When did you talk to Marcus? How long ago was that?
12 months.
It was a while ago. So it was early on.
The price point was much higher then.
Okay.
So in the beginning, we had to charge enough to not go out of business.
Yeah.
So over time, our goal was always to get the price down to a manageable amount for the average CrossFit gym.
Because they broke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, that's why we exist. We exist because...
And that's why they need the product.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We barbell business exists because nobody is doing it, right? Nobody is teaching it, well, in the way that we would do it, right? But there is definitely a huge need in the market. You know, you're talking about, I talked to you last week, and you said that four boxes had closed in Sydney last week.
Yeah.
You know, boxes are, you know, things like that are happening. And it's not because they're tired of doing CrossFit. It's because the business side of the house is really difficult. And it's difficult because they didn't put the thought and care into it in the beginning because they didn't believe that they had to. So in the beginning, if you were talking to Marcus, you know, last year, it was $10,000 plus $1,000 a month after that.
Yeah.
So our goal was always to get it down to $1,000 a month across the board. And because if you were to build this from scratch yourself and you were to outsource it, it would cost about $100,000 to have it built.
Yeah.
So we were having to charge a price to where we could actually build it for people. Because we were having, our processes then are much different than our processes now. Everything is much more streamlined now and efficient. So where we're at now is just straight up $1,000 across the board. So you sign up, it's $1,000. Every gym can manage that. Every gym can afford that. That's five or six new members. And in 45 days, the software will generate those five or six new members for you.
That's five or six new members a year.
Yeah.
Like in a whole year, you should be able to get five or six members. Like you should be able to do that like every month. But like in a year, you should be able to do that. Like
exactly.
Like we've had people come back to us and say, like, I got 62 members this year and it's not, and the year's not even over yet. So getting six members in an entire year is like, it's going to happen. It's obvious.
So a year ago when it was $10,000 to, you know, to get it started and $1,000 a month, you know, I can totally get why people weren't buying it now. Now when it's $1,000 straight up, just $1,000 a month straight up, the only thing that keeps people from doing is if they're willing to invest or not. Are you willing to invest in your business or not? And it's the people who are serious about investing in their business and trying to take it to the next level, they're going to invest. And the people who still don't see the value and like don't understand how ROI works, they're not going to do it. But when I say, and I'll simplify, return on investment, you know, like I just said, you sign up six new members, in a whole year, it's paid for.
Yeah.
And it's going to give you, you know, six plus members per month new. We have over 100 gyms using it now, and we have tons of awesome testimonials. Nobody, I think there was one gym that was being very difficult, and we let them go.
There's always one.
There's always one. And we suspected they were copying our system.
Yeah, so they kept asking us question after question after question. And we were like, oh, they're just trying to get as much information as possible.
They're like calling our head engineer with like these silly questions. And we, you know, we had suspected anyway. So we're like, oh, you know what? And same thing with a gym, right? If you're having a gym member that sucks, let them go. You can fire your members. You know, customers that suck, fire them. It's not a problem.
Some people don't believe that. It took a while for us to believe that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
But it's an important process.
Have you fired any members in a hilarious manner?
What's the funniest way you fired a member?
Should we tell the one about the person on our regional team?
I'd say the funniest is, just utilizing the podcast to sort of streamline the process.
Okay, so, what does that mean?
So we had like this really pivotal episode for us where 35, was it?
It was 35.
35.
He's like, definitely.
And it was kind of like it was the first time that it was just, there was no guest. So it was just like Raph and I, and we sat down and essentially we were sacrificing our entire life to be regionals athletes and go to the games.
That's what you got to do.
That's what you got to do.
That's true. That's called dedication.
Yeah. And essentially we didn't get the result we wanted. We didn't qualify the team. A lot of things went wrong. And we were very honest about, you know, we're like, we feel like shit right now. We're very emotional. Let's just get on a podcast and see what happens. So we put the mics on and we just fucking went for it. We're like, you know what? It wasn't worth it. It was a fucking waste of time. The business suffered. Like I hate myself right now. Like I'm injured. All this stuff came out that was like really healthy for us at the time, but really true and like really candid. And then basically we had a lot of our members listen to it and we didn't actually name any names, but we're like, look, this is the situation. This is how it went out. We didn't blame anyone. Obviously it's a team effort. It's a team of six people. certain people interpreted that to be a personal attack on them. At the time, we're like, oh, Jesus Christ, we're trying to put out all these fires and stuff running around. Like, oh, we're sorry, and trying to explain ourselves. This is what we really meant. And then at the end of the day, we just kind of let it go. And we're like, you know, if you want to leave, maybe you should leave. And we never really had that happen before. We're trying to hold on to everyone. Like, it's like, there's no money out there. Like, you're the only people that pay us money. And then once you get over that and you realize it's actually the one thing holding you back from making more money or bringing in the people you really want to work with, then, you know, we basically were like, you know, we should do this more often. That person over there, I don't really like that person either. Like, maybe we should start to
move purge.
That. Not like the that, purge, but yeah, just, you know, and then
you gotta trim the bushes.
Yeah.
It ended up being the best episode, yeah, probably for our gym and for the podcast.
Yeah, well, at the time, yeah, it was huge. Yeah.
I get to do a personal purge about every 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
You do that on the podcast, or do you just
no?
You just is there a
this
barbell
episode's about all the people I hate?
Be like a barbell purge once every 6 months, like a third show.
You just go on. You just write them on the blackboard. All the employees.
Yeah, those names you see on the board right there. They're next for the purge.
Yeah.
I have a further question for the barbell business.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the program. How many gyms do it?
Oh, I mentioned 100.
That's all the gyms that use it now?
At the moment, we have a little over 100, yeah.
So do you guys sit around? You're like, how many? Like, that's the thing that can change the most lives. It's like 100 gyms. Each one has like 200 members. Is that the way you see it? Is this going to be like every single gym? There's a shitload more than 100 gyms in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man. How much should I share? I don't know.
Do any CrossFit affiliates... Are there any non-CrossFit affiliates that use it?
So what?
Are there any non-CrossFit affiliates that use it?
Like, no, we can't do that right now.
No, okay. we're not set up for that at the moment.
Okay. At the moment. Does that mean?
Well, I mean, we could do it someday, but right, it's not in the works.
You weren't planning
on
doing it.
Technologically, we could do it.
Yeah.
Our passion is CrossFit gyms, and it's conveniently easier to do it in a very specific vertical like CrossFit. So, we do plan on being in probably, I'm shooting for 3,000 or 4,000 in the next 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. So I want to be in 3 to 5,000 gyms. And the logic system is leaps and bounds ahead of anything else. And we're making improvements like monthly, like incredibly fast. We're putting a lot of the money's going into R&D. And so we're ensuring that like nothing will be better for a long time. And we're working with a couple other companies that are building amazing software. So we're getting direct back and forth with those engineers. So we have actually some pretty exceptional access, which makes it really fun. So with that being said, what we're offering right now in a year from now is going to be way better. And it's probably going to, I don't want to say anything because I don't want to promise anything because we've done things and we've stopped doing it and brought things back. We got to do things in a very specific order, but it's going to be very capable of doing a lot of things that's going to allow the gym owner to make more money, impact more lives. And I also want to set up to where the gym owner can even impact lives of the people that are not stepping into their facility.
Okay.
So we want to be able to activate the gym owner and the coaches in a way where they can reach outside of their own box even.
Yeah, I want to help the gym owners automate as much as possible. That way they can get back to doing the things that they enjoy. They can get back to, like, you know, helping their members, like, actually get in better shape and get stronger and lose body fat and whatever else they're trying to help the members do. That way they can be 100% customer facing and not have to worry about all this like automation and websites and you know, email and all the stuff that's like not that fun. Like, there's certain parts of businesses that are a lot of fun and there's parts of the business that aren't a lot of fun. So we're taking all the parts that typically aren't that much fun. We're automating those. That way the gym owner can get back to just doing the cool parts and they don't have to worry about all this other stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that are hard to measure. When I ask a gym owner, it's like, how many people come to your website a month? How many of those people opt into your newsletter? How many of those people schedule an intro? How many of those people come in to try an intro? How many of those people convert to members? Oh, by the way, how many people are you, what's your retention like? How many people do you lose a month? How many people you get a month? What's your net member growth? And they look at me and they're like, I have no idea what any of those numbers are. I'm not tracking them. Or if they are tracking them, it's like nobody's able to give me like the number.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's around 10. And I'm like, you have no idea.
Yeah.
And we have a system where you can log in and all those numbers are right there.
Yeah.
You know, you can go, oh, Well, I know where we're weak. We're weak on sales. We're weak on this, or we need to change the offer. It becomes the things that we don't want to think about as gym owners, we handle. We want it to be so easy and apparent that it's just like you log in, you go, oh, this is obviously where we need to make an improvement, or this is obviously what we should change. So it's not a mystery, so that you can get back, like what Doug was saying, like so you can be the coach, the front-facing person. So I find there's two types of gym owners. Primarily, there's the gym owner who just wants to coach, and the business stuff is wearing them out, and then it gets to a point where they don't even want to be a gym owner anymore. And then there's the gym owner who actually did. They started it, and now they want to go sit on the beach, or they want to go – they want to do something else too, and they want to automate the gym so they're not coaching anymore, and they're not like just managing the facility, and then they can also go do something like do a podcast like what you guys have got going on.
Similar to you guys,
you've gained some freedom.
Yeah,
right. You know, I had an exceptional day right in this very room one day about a year ago, and I was thinking, I was in deep meditation, and I was thinking, why is it that I work so hard? Look around, you look out, there's water. In San Diego, the weather's perfect. I've got surfboards, I go surfing anytime I want, I go work out, I've got awesome friends. Life is fucking amazing, right? Fucking amazing. Like, people come hang out with me for a week, they're like, I would love to have this life. And that's exactly why I work as hard as I do, is because I want other people to have what I have. You know, I have a peace of mind, I'm happy. I'm not having to worry about I'm not having to do a lot of things that I don't want to do. I'm getting to do a lot of things that I enjoy doing. And I have peace and happiness, you know, deep down inside. And a lot of that's really hard to achieve when you're worried about how you're going to pay rent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Becoming like a real business coach. Speaking like a real business coach. Well, that's how our business coach speaks. Mm-hmm. So you sound exactly like him right now.
We do a lot of business coaching.
I mean, that's what our mastermind is for. You know, we don't have the way that we systematically coach businesses is we have a mastermind. We meet for 3 days every 90 days, and we hang out together as a group and have a good time, and we coach each other. You know, it's fun.
How many people are in that mastermind?
It depends on which event. Like the individual events, usually we get between 15 and 30, depending on the event. But it's not really about the events specifically. It's more like a year-long membership. And then the events are just like a convenient excuse to get us to meet up and have a really good time.
Yeah.
Like last time we were in Cabo in Mexico, and that was a ridiculous trip. We're at this cool all-inclusive resort. You could get guacamole and ahi tuna tostadas whenever you wanted to, day or night, as many as you wanted. And there was never a line. That was the best part.
That's like the best trip ever.
Yeah.
Best ever.
And then we went four wheeling together, and we kayaked in the ocean, and then when we weren't doing our little field trips, we were just hanging out talking about business, man. We had an amazing time, and we've done that seven or so times now, something like that, like in a different location every time. Like Mike said before, like next time we're going to Catalina Islands here on the West Coast, and we do it once a quarter, man. It's a crazy way to get to know, you know, kind of all the rock stars in the industry, and it's a really fun way to make some friends and to improve your business, because all the only people that are invited are all people that are highly successful.
Yeah.
Like there's no beginners or intermediate people allowed. Like if you aren't really successful, then you're not allowed in the group. It's like, you know, it's like going to pro baseball practice. Like if you're not a professional baseball player, like you can't come to practice.
Yeah.
Like so the only way that baseball players get better or wrestlers or MMA fighters or whatever, like iron sharpens iron, so to speak. Like if you're an MMA fighter and you're fighting a bunch of scrubs all the time, you're not getting any better. Like you got to fight against people that are just as good as you, just like a business owner needs to have conversations and, you know, go like deep dive into their own company with their own opportunities and struggles and problems. Like so they can, when they talk to someone else who's been through the same issues or maybe even has gone through some even harder issues, they can get that perspective from someone else who like is another killer in the industry, and they can all help each other.
Yeah, what's cool about the mastermind is Cabo was just, for me personally, was just amazingly fun. Like I don't know if I could have had more fun.
It was a work trip, but that was like the best vacation I've ever had.
That's what I'm saying. It's like I had so much fun, and everyone left and just like made. Some people made some super massive changes in their business. Like,
crazy changes.
Like, yeah,
for
like
the better.
Completely restructured like equity. And
oh, wow.
Some people were bought out.
Changed
and
equity. Holy
people,
moly.
Oh, yeah. People I'd say the first two retreats, people attending the mastermind, the majority of the people, their first two retreats, there's massive change in their business. And what we've seen is probably 6 months in to being in the group, people find a stride and everything's nice and like, oh, I got this kind of figured out. So a lot of times when people first join the group, they're doing pretty good, but they're making a lot of waves. They're splashing a lot.
Okay.
You know, and then I guess we could say the motorboat to sailboat type of analogy, you know.
Okay.
They're making a lot of noise. They're splashing a lot in the motorboat, and they come see us, and they're able to, like, go more into the sailboat mode. And it's just like, pfft, let the sails fill.
Yep.
Nice and smooth.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's awesome and really fun for me because the retreat itself is super rewarding and just fun.
Yeah.
Because we do, like, the more structured morning, like conference style teaching and interacting maybe in a room in the morning and the afternoon. Yeah. We went ATVs and went kayaking out in the ocean and
nice.
Whatever. The next one's in Hollywood and we're going to go do some really cool stuff too there. And so it's, the fact that I get to have a blast doing it and then the effects afterwards are that people's lives are completely changed and remove stress and make more money. I'm like, I mean, what could be a better scenario?
Are these all CrossFit gym owners?
No.
Okay.
I'd say about half.
Okay.
Yeah. So the other half are people doing business online or they're doing online coaching, supplement companies.
Okay.
So it's actually like, I love the mix of people in the group because, having that difference is really beneficial. Mm. Like having somebody that's in the supplement industry, you know, now they have an opportunity to like get their supplements in this person's gym too. So there's like all these networking opportunities yeah. that exist there. One thing that I haven't seen just – well, it has happened. Well, no. We've had a couple meet at a mastermind, and now they're – which is Adi and Michael Kazu,
mm-hmm.
Adi Zucker. And,
yeah, yeah.
And they've been together.
Working against gravity.
Uh-huh. That's right.
Yeah.
And so they're like dating now, so it's cool they met at the mastermind. And then but I'm waiting for someone to like partner on a business and just fucking blow up.
Right.
Like I'm waiting for like these two people to show up at the mastermind that are polar opposites, and they may already be in the group, and it'll be just like a year or two from now, and they're like, yeah, we should do business together. And I'm waiting for that to happen and like that turn into like $100 million business or something.
Yeah. You know? And what do you see like is like the consistent characteristics of the affiliate owners that are in that mastermind, if there's, what, 15 of them? 20 of them? 30 of them?
Well, not necessarily. Like Mike said, it's not all necessarily business owners. It depends on
of the gym owners that are there. Like, what are the...
You're asking if they have any particular characteristics amongst them that are similar?
Yeah.
I'd say yes, because I think the demographic of people that tend to be founders of CrossFit gyms all seem to be quite similar. They do seem to be quite entrepreneurial. They like CrossFit for a specific reason, where that, in my mind, oftentimes that is because they like a lot of variety. They like the fact that the workouts are different every day. The people that are drawn to CrossFit that want to start a gym tend to be people that they, like I said, are already very entrepreneurial. They like to start projects like right away. They're kind of more like Mike. Like Mike's a type E entrepreneur. Like he's a prototype entrepreneur. I'm in my opinion not a prototypical entrepreneur. I'm someone who, if I can partner with someone who is a prototypical entrepreneur, then I can do very well. I like the idea of having my own company, but I don't view myself as particularly entrepreneurial specifically, where I want to start new projects all the time and have crazy ideas all the time. And I'm like really excited to do all these new things all the time. That's not generally my personality type. And that's how I categorize entrepreneurs in my mind, at least one way that I do. And I think a lot of CrossFit gym owners really fit that mold where they might not have had a lot of capital to start any other type of business, but CrossFit gyms are so easy. Like you could just get a warehouse, spend like, you know, 15, 20, 30 grand maybe. And all of a sudden you, with a 2-day certification, have the ability to start a business where the expectations are primarily fitness driven, like just show up and work out. And if I sweat a lot and my heartbeat gets up really, really high and I'm sore the next day, then that's the only requirement. And there's no expectation, or at least that didn't used to be years and years ago, that there was really a kind of a functioning business there. Just that, you know, that you thought the training was really cool. And so it took all these people that had kind of this entrepreneurial spirit and were really excited about this thing called CrossFit and let them open a lot of CrossFit gyms. So I do think that it caters to a very specific demographic of people. To answer your question,
you sound definitely more like the technician
I totally am.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
What I see in common is the gyms that are doing well that show up put a lot of effort into their culture. And okay. When I talk to box owners, what I hear a lot is, you know, what makes you different? And they're like, oh, coaching and community. Everybody says that.
Everybody says that.
Everybody thinks that's what makes them different than the other guys. And yeah, everyone's culture and community and coaching is different.
In the programming.
Yeah.
Everybody says it.
Yeah. So what I do find the difference between the box owner who is successful and not is the ones that are successful go all in.
Yeah.
They're not working. They don't have a full-time gig and this is their part-time gig and they're waking up early and doing it late. Like, this is what they do all day, every day, is they've gone all in. They also are good leaders. They care a lot about their membership and they care about people getting results and they care about people having a good time. And they also have the mindset and recognize that business systems are important and they treat it like a business, you know? So I think a lot of people care about the culture of their gym and their people, but they don't necessarily even consider their gym is a business. Mm-hmm. They don't even accept it. And they think that you have the gym side, they're separating the gym and the business. Whereas the person who's successful sees it as one single continuous system.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. That is one differentiating factor for the people that, for the gym owners specifically that are at the mastermind. Like I said before, it's kind of only successful people. There's no beginners allowed. And so it's application only to be a part of the mastermind. Like we screen you. It's we're going to invite you in. Like it's not something where it just anyone can get into it. So
what do you screen for?
Well, basically to see if you know what you're doing is a easy way to put it. Like we basically interview you and we look to see like, okay, like, is this person going to be able to teach me something about business?
Yeah.
Like on a consistent basis.
That's really important.
The ability to contribute.
I'm there to learn too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
The ability to contribute and the desire to contribute.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to not think you know it all at the same time. Like you have to be both a student and a teacher at any of our events or just to be a part of the community at large. And so one thing that differentiates specifically the gym owners from just the average gym owner, so to speak, is that as Mike said, like they're real business owners and like they're passionate about business and running kind of a tight ship where certainly people are getting the results in the gym and the fitness side of it is tied down, but then the business is operating as it needs to be stable where they're not just focused on even this one business. They recognize that they're entrepreneurs and they're going to have this business now and then another business a couple years from now and another business 10 years from now and then potentially a different business or just a larger business 20 years from now. Like they're in it for the long haul. Like they're not just running a gym for a couple of years and then they're going to get bored with it and then they're going to go back to being a firefighter. And there's nothing wrong with anyone that wants to do that. But to be in the mastermind, like you have to be someone that you are passionate about business. You want to grow. You want to grow as a person. You want to grow as a company. Like you are trying to do big things in the world. And a CrossFit gym may just be the first thing that you happen to get off the ground with. But now you're looking to either have, you know, 5 CrossFit gyms or 10 CrossFit gyms or maybe you want to have like your own different type of gym that's not quite CrossFit. Maybe it's weightlifting or powerlifting or specifically for football players or baseball players or youth sports or maybe you want to bail on CrossFit gyms altogether and do something like we did with the Barbell Shrugged. Or maybe you want to have a supplement line someday or maybe you just want to bail and do clothing or I don't care. Like if you want to bail and go do, I keep saying bail like you're just like splitting town, but
running.
Like if you want to, you know, not do the CrossFit gym thing forever, but and that's a totally cool thing to do for a couple of years, but you might have aspirations to do something that is just bigger and grander than running a small gym. And that's a very cool thing to do, but most people in the mastermind, they recognize that they want to do something more, and they're always pushing.
Right, yeah. And so what are, like, when you coach these people or when you guys get together, and maybe there's people outside of the mastermind as well that you speak with, I'm sure you guys have a massive network, you interact with a lot of people. What do you feel like keeps coming up in terms of, like, the mindset stuff that people can't get over? Like, if we speak personally for our mastermind, and we have businesses that are all, like, heaps of random stuff, like dudes that run their own construction companies, to girls that help other girls launch products or whatever it might be. Like the big one is, and you've mentioned before, is like asking for money. So like the weird stuff that happens around money, the weird stuff where it's like, you know, you're trying to take someone through a process and get them to value themselves by paying. That's essentially how I see it. You know, I find that I'm often, or these people are often coming to our coaches with like, hey, how can I, you know, improve my sales? Because the fundamental issue is they get weird around money, and they need a talk about getting over the shit that they have deep down with, you know, having money. Like, some people see money in their bank account and they're like, I have to spend it, because they're like, I don't deserve to have that sort of money. Or they get too much and they don't know what to do with it. And all of a sudden they kind of freeze and they sabotage themselves. And what are the things that you guys see? That's personally what we see.
Clarify the question for me.
So,
please.
Like, when clients come to you, or people in the mindset, like in the mastermind, what are the mindsets things that they constantly need help with, or that you constantly go over?
Gotcha.
Most people in the mastermind don't have money problems.
Okay.
If they're at the mastermind,
they
drop for the first retreat, they're dropping at least at a minimum 5 G's just to come for 3 days.
Yeah.
And if they're a member, they dropped 25 or 30.
Wait, Mexico was $5,000?
That was $7,500
for Cabo.
Seems pretty cheap for all that
it's
stuff.
Mexico.
Yeah. So most people in our masterminds, it's rare to have somebody that has the money issue.
Sure.
When I'm doing if I end up on a consulting call this happens with people, you know, if I end up on a call or something, I'm at the CrossFit Games and I'm talking to a box owner, and that's the person who I go, oh, what do you charge? And they're like, oh, $120 a month. I go, oh, okay. Well, how'd you pick that number? Well, the guy down the street. I go, oh, okay. So how much money do you want to make? Oh, you know, just enough. Like, well, can you give me a number? And they can't even tell you. And I'm like, well, how about 3 years from now, what do you want your personal income to be? And they go, oh, well, you know, it's like they're afraid to utter the words. They're afraid to say the number, because then, which tells me they're afraid that I'm going to judge them for being too high or too low.
Yeah.
Which means they're worried about what people think about how much money they make.
Yeah.
And the moment you start worrying about what other people think you make, you're screwed, because that's part of what you were getting to, really, is it's that fear of judgment. And that same person probably judges other people for making money. It's like, rich people are assholes, right? So I remember I had a friend who, he would say things like that. We had our whole Wall Street thing going on, right? And he was like, oh, the bankers are evil and they're assholes. And I was like, well, you do know we all have a common friend who is a banker. And he makes a lot of money. What do you think about that guy? He goes, well, he's all right.
He's different.
He's different. I was like, oh, okay. Well, so which rich person do you know that's an asshole? Well, I don't know any that, you know, whatever, you know. But, you know, people get these stories written in their head. They get these stories,
yes,
right? And it probably happened, you know, something happened with their parents or something like that. I personally had a hard time with selling gym memberships for a while because – I think it had something to do with, I got sold a gym membership in a very shady way in my early days. And then I basically associated like, selling gym memberships as a shady thing to do. Right.
How was it shady? Did you sign something like shouldn't have, or was it like a hard sell or something?
Yeah.
Like that?
Super high pressure.
Okay.
No, you know, here's a 12 month agreement and
like while you're in the middle of a set of back squats. Like,
yeah, well, start. You know, it was, well, you know, they take you to the side room and it was just super high pressure. It was like, if you leave today, the deal goes away. And it was just super like, you need to sign the name right now.
Yeah. Okay.
And it was just like, it was the way it was done. And so, and a lot of people have that experience, you know, they associate that experience with all sales, even though the majority of sales you experience are very positive. You might categorize that in your mind as good advice. But the bad sales get categorized as sales.
Of course. Would you get that? And do you still think that's a negative thing? Do you still think the high pressure?
No. Right. Nah. Well, the high pressure? Yeah, I don't like the idea of when I say high pressure, I mean trying to make someone feel shameful or guilty for not signing it is not right.
Yeah.
I won't do that.
Of course.
I want someone to feel like a hero. And that they're doing themselves and the people around them a favor by signing up. They're investing in their own health to serve themselves and those around them. So if they don't see it as an investment, and if you're just trying to shame them, so it all depends on how you're trying to get them to sign the piece of paper. You know, if you're going to inspire them and you understand that they understand that it's an investment in themselves, then yes. But yeah, you know.
So how'd you overcome it? So,
just recognizing that was the case was enough for me to overcome that personally. So, but I do find that a lot of people just have problems around money, period, because, you know, their parents might not have made money, or they don't feel like, you know, there's a number of things that go on there. But when I talk to gym owners, a lot of times it's, they were never taught about money management or anything like that. And that, they're afraid to charge a lot because they're afraid of people judging them for making money. There's just a whole host of reasons. And a lot of times once they get past that belief, that's all they needed to do. And now everything starts clicking.
Mm. Yeah, cool. All right, are we going to add something, Doug? All right, cool. Well, we're going to wrap with our three questions unless, Raf, you wanted to. No? Okay, so you can answer these individually.
Okay.
Unless you, for some reason, have the exact same answer. That'd be funny. What is something that you, Mike, do every single day that you feel like is integral to the success of the day? Like, without it, it's a failed day or it feels incomplete.
Nothing. I never feel like it's a failed day or incomplete. I get the most done and the most high quality. My days are of the highest quality when I start with meditation.
And what does that look like?
For me, I have a little, I'll say my morning routine. And so my morning routine is I drink lemon water. I then use a gorgeous ball from Jill Miller, and I massage my diaphragm so I can get nice big breaths. I then sit and I, or actually kneel, and I do Wim Hof breathing. There's a iPhone app called Inner Fire if you're interested in that. I do three cycles of some breathing. Really allows me to get present. I then sit in Zen style meditation for 20 to 30 minutes, and then I read something old.
What do you mean something old?
Right now I'm reading Bhagavad Gita, which is a 3,000-year-old Indian text.
Yeah.
And so...
is that the one written by the yogi?
It's a yogi. No, I don't know who it was written by.
Okay.
I don't think... Pretty old. I don't know if anyone does. It's kind of like who wrote the Bible, right?
Yeah.
You might be thinking about Yogananda.
Okay.
Which actually, Yogananda set up his temple right down the road from here, which is interesting if you want to go check that out. He's like the guy that brought a lot of that stuff to America,
and
probably responsible for why yoga is as big as it is here. It's a book about the yogic traditions. Anyways, I read that and I usually read something or Tao Te Ching or something like that. Something that's very principle based. Like this is the laws of nature and principles and how things work in the world. So I like to study something that is very, this is how the human works. And so technically, the book is just about the inner battle that happens within us every day as we make decisions. And what we really should be doing, or what we want to do, or what we feel like we should be doing, we're all familiar with that battle of doing what we really want to do versus what we feel like we should be doing, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So that helps with helping me keep centered, and it allows me to make decisions easily, quickly, and without attachment.
Awesome.
No 3,000-year-old texts for me. I'm with Mike. I never feel like it's a wasted day or like an incomplete day if I don't do any of these things. But like on a super basic level, like if I don't get outside in the sun, then I just do not feel normal. I feel like I'm like in a video game oftentimes where I'm like a little, if you're playing something like old school Legends of Zelda or something like that, and like your life bar is like almost all the way down, where like your character's gonna die, and then like you walk under like the force field beam, and it's like wow wow wow, and you can see like your status bar moving back up. That's how I feel when I walk around the sunshine, dude. Like when I walk around the sun, like I feel like it's just pouring life back into me. Like I feel so good when I'm out in the sun. I grew up in the Northwest where it rains all the time. It's always cloudy all the time, and now I'm in San Diego, and like every day I walk outside and I see the sun, and I'm like super appreciative that it's sunny and not cloudy, Every time it's cloudy, I think the sun's never going to come back. So, ever again. And so, yeah, for me, just going outside, man. Like, the older I get, the more I really appreciate just being outside in the fresh air and not being cooped up inside.
It's the second time Zelda's come up on this trip. Awesome.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And I can see why you like Townsville as well. Super sunny, super hot.
That's right. Yeah. I love Townsville. Yeah. Dude, living in the dry tropics. Yeah. Oh, it was awesome. It was warm and sunny every single day. I knew people there that they'd lived there their whole life, and they'd never put on pants ever in their whole life because they were cold.
Yep.
Like, did you like bring them pants?
People in Darwin don't own jumpers, even further north.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's a jumper?
Sweater.
Like sweatshirts. Yeah, like my little brother lives in San Diego now with his fiance, and she grew up in Cairns, and like she thinks it's so cold here.
Yeah. yeah. Yeah, well, like, it's hot, but like, it's not really hot. Yeah.
Yeah.
It gets ridiculous sometimes. Like, the walls sweat and shit, and like, animals die and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Cairns is cool, man. Cairns is pretty. It's like Hawaii.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool.
I still haven't been to Australia. I need to make it over there.
Yeah. Well, be prepared for like way more bugs. So, like, if we're chilling here right now, dude, like,
I'm not going. I'm going to stay right
here. That's the best part of San Diego, dude. All the doors are open here in San Diego. There's no bugs.
Yeah.
Even at nighttime when, like, you got all the lights on inside and all the doors are open, still no bugs.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
That's what I kept asking Ralph. I'm like, when are the mosquitoes coming? Like, when are the flies and the shit like that, and the lizards and all that stuff coming? It's just never coming.
Not like in Townsville. We had spiders in our house that were as big as our hands.
Yep.
What the fuck? Oh, man. This thing. Like, Google Huntsville or something. Huntsman spiders.
Harmless, but scary.
They're big, man. They're fast as shit. They're so, man, they're so fast. Oh,
he knows very clearly.
Yeah.
So second question is, what's something recently that you guys have changed your mind on that for a long time was like a pretty strong belief? You had a stake in the ground and you were like, I really believe this. And then you're like, I'm going to move that stake. It can be anything.
What's recent?
We normally let it go for like a year, two years.
Year, 2 years, okay.
The longer they pause, the more we extend it.
Yeah, there you go.
It's a tough one. Just jump in.
It's a really tough one. You're putting us on the spot with the big question.
So
maybe I should have been prepared.
So
one thing I see is you guys moving out here. Was that one of the big decisions that you guys did about like how where you live influences your life?
I wouldn't say I changed my mind about that. I think where you live has a really big influence on your life, and it wasn't that we changed our minds, it's that we already believed that, and we were like, we need to go to California, because Memphis, Tennessee isn't the best place in the world, so to speak, and San Diego is, in my opinion, one of the best places in the world.
For what reason?
We're getting off topic here. You got one? You got an answer?
Maybe. I mean, I think I would have always believed this, but I believe this more strongly now than ever. As more time goes on, this is like, and this happened when I was at Paleo FX. I was speaking and, you know, I'm amongst a bunch of trainers talking about meditation. And it is more obvious to me now that the quality of your mind will resonate into the rest of your life. Everything that's happening internally will happen externally. And when I mean quality, I mean being able to focus your mind on a single task or person or something and not letting it drift around. The clarity in which that I exist now is I couldn't have understood it 3 years ago. So that's why I actually alluded to meditation, is because I now understand at a very deep level that of what quality even means. And so for me, I guess a new belief over the last couple of years is that quality is the most important thing to seek.
That's cool.
Here, maybe I have one for you. So growing up.
Don't one up me.
growing up, you know, I was never really a person that like really valued family. Like I'm super individualistic, and I, you know, family was always very cool, and I'm very lucky that I can even attempt to say that because my family life has always been so good. Like growing up, I didn't know how good I had it, and so I didn't value it, my family the way that I probably should have, because it was just so good all the time that I took it for granted. And now that I've kind of come full circle where now I'm a parent and I have a kid of my own. Now having a kid, I really value family in a way that I didn't my whole life prior to having a kid. Now I have a son who's a year and a half, and my wife's pregnant with the next one on the way come October. So
congratulations.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you. And my son's fucking super awesome. My wife's super cool. And like I really, really value family in a way that I never thought that I would or could before having a child. So family for me.
And has that made you take some sort of different action? Like, do you call them every day now? And
no, God, no, Jesus.
Well, that's okay, crazy.
You crazy? I'm joking, but I certainly call them my, like, I'm assuming you mean like my immediate family, like my parents and my siblings. Like,
yeah, that's what I assumed you were talking about.
Yeah, I call them way more than I used to.
Okay.
And I actually have made much more of an effort to reach out to, other like my cousins and things like that more often than I ever would have otherwise. Right. And then even beyond that, like I'm much more likely to reach out to like if I have a buddy and like he has a wife and kids, like I'll be on the phone with my friend and instead of just being like, okay, see ya, I'll be like, hey, you know, like put your wife on for a second, like put your kid on the phone, like and I'll like actually get on the phone or FaceTime like with the other members of his family rather than just talk to my friend and then like neglect his family. So that was a really big shift for me. Wanting, not just doing it, but like actually wanting to meet other people and meet their family as well. And so now it's, I bring it into conversation intentionally and for fun, where I never would have done that prior to having a kid myself. So like I just went to Atlanta to visit JD, the guy that developed the product of Barbell Logic, and I went out there to just hang out with him and to build that relationship as well and just have some fun. But then like he just had a baby, 4 or 5 months ago, and he has a wife, and like I wanted to go meet his family and hang out with his family and get to know them. Like, yeah. I feel like that's really important, just like building those relationships and making them feel like they're important too. It's just there's nothing bad about it. It's only a good thing to do that, and I'm more willing to do that now than ever.
I've noticed that change in Doug over the years.
Yeah. So,
yeah. As an outside, not being inside of him. What? That got
Mike.
Weird.
Being inside of him. Yeah.
How did this happen?
I noticed when I was inside of him that he's definitely changed his mind on this stuff.
It's come to my attention.
I do want to clarify one thing. I was talking about quality I would say what changed was I moved from quantity to quality. So just if somebody need clarification on that.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And the third question, your favorite quote, and what does it mean to you? Or maybe just right now.
To make one up.
Favorite quote?
New episode out every Wednesday or whatever the Barbell Show.
I'm sure there's something out there that I really, really like. I don't know.
We were talking here that I like the deep.
The deep.
Drop everything and train.
Drop everything and train.
There you go. Deep. Got the shirt on.
Yeah,
right now.
I like the deep. The whole idea behind deep is that no matter how busy you get, take time for yourself to do the things that serve you. You know, like I see it happen a lot. An easy example is, the mother that just had a child who they because they put the child first, they let themselves go. And 2 or 3 years down the road, they're like, how did I get here? And then they're so stressed out, they can't even take care of the kid.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, it's counterintuitive that if I take an hour or two for me a day, that I'll, in the end, be able to give more than ever. And so I think, to me, deep, that's what that means, is taking that time for yourself so that you can show up better for the rest of the world.
Yeah, I love to tell people, like, and I might give you more time to think about this, Doug, if you don't already have an answer. But I like to tell people, like, with your training, what you haven't realized is we're talking about all these goals and stuff, and like it's really great, and you're gonna start. But what you're about to do right now, and most people from Sydney, like where we are, their life's quite chaotic. Like they've got a really stressful job, they work a lot, they have a kid, they new parents, all those sort of things. I'm like, what training is actually doing for you now? It's like the first thing in your life that you're about to do that's gonna give you complete control. Like there is no external forces with you in your training. Essentially, exactly what you're doing right now, you will see the results. Whereas usually, you can have a great relationship with your wife and like, yes, you can give to that, but there's still an external thing, like something, God forbid, might happen and ruin that relationship. There's businesses, there's some, the property price can go up. There can be a fucking financial crisis in the world, but at the end of the day, like training really is the only thing. And this is like meditation and stuff like that. It's the only thing you can really control.
Yeah.
And like you're about to take control of yourself, and like that's gonna like make you feel less chaotic.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, I didn't really think about it like that. I'm like, well, let's start.
Yeah, I think I saw a statistic at some point where anytime there's a financial, a global financial issue or like national where things are going down, people start feeling out of control, and that's when they start signing up for gym memberships.
Yeah.
Is because they're like, they're seeking some level of control somewhere in their life, and that's one that where you actually do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Your favorite quote, Doug.
Got it. One of my favorite quotes is actually a barbell shrug core value. So there's something that we use in our day-to-day decisions that we decide to make officially one of the barbell shrug core values. That is, if it's not hell yeah, it's hell no. I don't know who originally quoted that or where that came from, but that is something that I have personally used and Mike's personally used and that we use within the company to make decisions where if it's not hell yeah, then it's hell no, which basically to Mike's point a second ago about like being more likely to choose things based on quality. There's so many opportunities and we have this abundance mindset where we know there's going to be more opportunities in the future. And if something isn't just like totally lighting a fire inside of us, where we're really excited to do it and there's a lot of passion behind it and it's the obvious best decision. If there's any question, if it's not hell yeah, that's the fucking one we definitely want to do. That is it. If we found it, then it's probably hell no. And we probably should wait for the next opportunity. So Warren Buffett even said like one time, he probably said many times, but like I heard him say one time that he wishes that people only had like 20 investment opportunities their entire life. You only had 20 tickets to check, right? And so if that was the case, if you could only do this a small handful of times, then you would be very choosy about the investments that you picked. Like you would only pick the best ones, and that's kind of what we're getting at. There's many opportunities, and you'll never be at a lack of opportunity. Like there's always something available to you if you know where to look and you kind of know what you're doing, and if you have success, people will bring that stuff to you. And so in that case, like if there's so many opportunities, you need to know when to say no. Like a lot of people say, like you, to get from where you were to where you are, you need to say yes to everything. From get to where you are to where you want to be, you need to say no to almost everything. So that's kind of what we're getting at here. Like if it's not hell yeah, not just like, yeah, that sounds okay. If it's anything less than hell yeah, then you probably should say no and wait for your next opportunity.
Yeah, there's always next time.
Yeah.
That's except good. For next time. It's never coming.
Yeah.
you know who introduced me to hell yeah, hell no? Is our other business partner, Rory. But he used it in fashion. He's like, when you try on clothes, look in the mirror, and he's like, if it's not a hell yeah, it's a hell no. And that fucking works. But
that's
yeah,
right, man. It's applied to anything.
Yeah. That's cool.
It's not hell yeah, it's hell no. Rory. Is that his name?
Yeah, Rory.
From Rory.
Yeah, yeah.
He's
the
original.
He didn't say it first, but he said it. So
yeah, at some point.
Still a quote.
So I think people have a ton of value out of this podcast, and thank you so much for doing that for our listeners. If there's one thing that you'd want them to do after this podcast, because you know people definitely listen to podcasts and take no action whatsoever, what would you want them to do, even if it's a different answer for both of you?
If you're an athlete or coach, just go to barbellshrug.com. And if you're a gym owner, barbellbusiness.com. And if you want to just see my shenanigans, you can follow me around on social media.
What's the Instagram?
Mike_Bledsoe.
Okay.
I think the same is for Snapchat. And then you can just search me on Facebook, Mike Bledsoe. Yeah.
You bet. I'm just Douglas E. Larson on Instagram.
Nice. Awesome. Guys, thanks so much for being on. It's been an honor.
Yep.
Thank you for
Thank
having
you.
Us.
It was fun.
Thank you.
Cool.
Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themindmuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.